Chapter 34. "Admittedly," Sonia said a few minutes later, "normally I do not storm headquarters buildings of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and in broad daylight, too." We were parked down the block from the FBI's Chicago office, where Toot had guided us, crouched on the dashboard and demanding to know why Sonia hadn't rented one of the cars that could fly instead of the pokey old landbound minivan he had instead. Toot hadn't taken the answer that cars like that are imaginary seriously either. He had muttered a few things in Russian that only made Sonya's smile wider. "Damn," I said, staring at the building. "Toot, was Martin with her?"
"The yellow hair?"
Toot sat on the dashboard facing us, waving his feet.
"No, my liege,"
I grunted. "I don't like that either. Why wouldn't they have been taken together? Which floor is she on, Toot?"
"There,"
Toot said, pointing. I leaned over and hunkered down behind him so that I could look down the length of his little arm to the window he was pointing at. "Fourth," I said. "That was where Tilly was talking to me." Sonia reached down to produce a semi-automatic he'd hidden beneath the seat of the minivan and cycled around into the chamber, his eyes glued to the outside mirror. "Company." A bald, slightly overweight bum in a shabby overcoat and cast-off clothing shambled down the sidewalk with vacant eyes. But he was moving a little too purposefully toward us to be genuine. I was watching his hands with my shield bracelet ready to go, expecting him to pull a weapon out from beneath the big coat, and it wasn't until he was a few steps away that I realized it was Martin. He stopped on the sidewalk next to the passenger window of the van and wobbled in place. He rapped on the glass and held out his hand as if begging a handout. I rolled down the window and asked him, "What happened?" "The FBI did his legwork," he said. "They tracked our rental car back to my cover ID, got my picture, put it on TV. One of the detectives we shook down confirmed my presence and told them I'd been seen at your place, and they were waiting there when we came back to get you. Susan created a distraction so that I could get away."
"And you left her behind, huh?"
He shrugged.
"Her identity is genuine. And while they know she arrived with me and was seen with me, they can't prove that she's done anything. I've been operating long enough that the Red Court has seen to it that I'm on multiple international lists of wanted terrorists. If I were caught, both of us would have been taken."
I grunted.
"What did you find out?"
"The last of the Red King's inner circle arrived this morning. They'll do the ceremony tonight," he said. "Midnight, or a little after, if our astronomer's assessment is solid."
"Crap,"
Martin nodded. "How fast can you get us there?" I touched a fingertip to my mother's gem and double-checked the way there. "This one doesn't have a direct route. 3 hops, a couple of walks, one of them in bad terrain. Should take us 90 minutes. Gets us to within 5 miles of Chichen Itza." Martin looked at me for a long moment, then he said, "I can't help but find it somewhat convenient that you were suddenly able to provide that kind of fast transport to exactly the places we need to go." "The Red Court had their goodies stashed near a confluence of ley lines," I said. "A point of ample magical power. Chichen Itza is at another such confluence, only a lot bigger. Chicago is a crossroads, both physically and metaphysically. There are dozens of confluences either in the town or within 25 miles. The routes I know through the Never Never mostly run from confluence to confluence, so Chicago's got a direct route to a lot of places."
Sonia made an interested sound. "Like the airports in Dallas or Atlanta, or here, travel nexuses."
"Exactly." Martin nodded, though he didn't look like he particularly believed or disbelieved me.
"That gives us a little more than 9 hours," he said.
"The church is trying to get us information about local security at Chichen Itza. Meet me at St. Mary of the Angels." I handed him the change, scrounged from my pockets. "Tell them Harry Dresden said you were no Stevie D. We'll leave from there."
He shook his head a little. "You got the church to help you?"
"Hell, man, I got a Knight of the Cross driving me around," Sonia snorted. Martin studied Sonia with eyes that were a little wide.
"I see."
A certain energy seemed to enter him as he nodded, and I knew exactly what he was feeling, the positive upswing in his emotions, an electricity that came with a sudden understanding that not only was death not certain, but that victory might actually be possible. Hope, is a force of nature. Don't let anyone tell you different. Martin nodded. What about Susan? I'll get her out, I said. Martin ducked his head in another nod. Then he took a deep breath and said simply, Thank you. He turned and shambled away drunkenly, clutching his coins.
Seems like a decent fellow, Sonya said. His nostrils flared a little. Half vampire, you see. Fellowship of St. Giles?
Yeah, like Susan. I watched Martin vanish into Chicago's lunchtime foot traffic and said, I'm not sure I trust him.
I would say the feeling is mutual, Sonya said. When a man lives a life like Martin's, he learns not to trust anyone.
I grunted sourly. Stop being reasonable. I enjoy disliking him. Sonya chuckled and said,
So, what now?
I took the guns out of my duster pockets and stowed them beneath the minivan's passenger seat. You go back to St. Mary's. I go in and get Susan and meet you there.
Sonya lifted his eyebrows. You get her from in there?
Sure. He pursed his lips thoughtfully, then shrugged.
Okay, I suppose it is your funeral, da?
I nodded firmly. Da,